Welcome to another edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com. Schmelk, Dottino, you at 201-939-4513 or hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter. We're blessed to be joined by the great Nile Shah at the controls. We're going old school. It's like 2009 all over again. Unfortunately, we injured Dave Dominic playing basketball last night at our Giants basketball game.
Is that what happened?
He strained his calf, yes. Luckily, it was not an Achilles or anything like that. But he
strained
did.
Calf.
Yes, he had
but
a strained
yet that
calf.
Prohibits him from working the board?
We'll give him a break. It's the offseason. We want to make sure he's 100% healthy before he comes back to work and re-injures it. So Dave will be back. We'll be thanking Eli for giving us a hand today with the show. Of course, it's also the Giants charity golf outing today. So a lot of people out of the building working that up in Westchester. So a lot of stuff going on, folks, in the NFL. Things around the league, we could talk about anything on your mind, but there were kind of two questions that Paul and I kind of scoped out today from different articles around the internet that we thought were a little bit interesting that we could touch on over the course of today's show. And Paul, let's start with yours, but I think it's a little bit more specific to the Giants than mine.
Yeah, Bleacher Report today put up a posting. They wanted to know who would be the breakout player this year for each of the NFL's 32 teams. Now, I think the thing that kind of threw me for a loop is that they said the guy for the Giants, we're going to kick this off right at the top, was Saquon Barkley. And I have a problem with that because he's a rookie. And I don't think a breakout player can be a rookie. I think it's got to be someone who has already put together some type of resume in the league and then suddenly decides that, for whatever reason, he has a kick butt year. And for me, that's what a breakout player is. But they picked Saquon Barkley. And that's not to say that Barkley's not going to have a dramatic impact on this team. I'm sure he will. But the question wasn't who's going to be the most impactful player. The question was who's going to be the biggest breakout guy.
Yeah, and that's the problem to me, too. In order for a player to break out, they have to have a baseline already set in which to break out from. We don't know what Saquon Barkley is yet. So how is he going to break out when he doesn't even have a baseline level? So let's push that aside and talk about who we think the breakout players might be. And to me, I think there are two guys that you want to talk about here. And obviously, breakout players are usually younger guys. But I think on the Giants' defense, it could be maybe an older guy, too, because it's a scheme change and maybe it'll advantage somebody. But I'm going to stick on the offensive side of the ball myself.
Okay.
And I came down to two guys that I like for the Giants' breakout player this year. Sterling Shepard, who had a really good rookie year. And last year, maybe had a little bit of a down year because of some injury issues. He had that ankle he really couldn't get over during the course of the year. And my second player, and I think this is who I'm eventually going to land on, is Evan Engram, who's coming off a rookie year where he played well, by his own admission, had way too many drops. He talked about at the end of the season, something he wants to clean up. But to me, in this offense, with Saquon Barkley being a big play threat, Odell Beckham Jr. being a big play threat, and both being matchup nightmares, the third stealthy matchup nightmare on this Giants team is Evan Engram. If you have him lined up as an inline tight end, and you get him on a strong safety that can't move that well, or a linebacker even better, he's going to create a lot of mismatches. So I think in this offense with Pat Shurmur, I think Evan Engram could have a breakout season.
Yeah, I don't think that's a bad pick at all, John. When we discussed it this morning, I offered you Dalvin Tomlinson, if only because I think as a part-time player last year as a rookie, he showed an awful lot of promise.
Oh, sure, he was good.
I think even though the Giants want to continue with a defensive line rotation, I think he's going to really make a name for himself as a force on the inside, much like Snacks has. I don't know if he's going to be to the level of Snacks, who has been an NFL All-Pro.
Still hasn't been a Pro Bowl yet.
No, but has been an NFL All-Pro player.
And also wasn't on the NFL 100, which is also a joke.
Yeah. Now, I don't know if he's going to reach the All-Pro status that Snacks has attained, but I think Tomlinson is going to wind up being a premier force in this league. I think you're going to be seeing and hearing a lot of the network color commentators doing Giants games saying, look at this Dalvin Tomlinson. You know, I feel very good about him.
See, now, here's the problem with it. Just because I know how it works, you could be absolutely right, and nobody will notice it. Like, he could play really, really well, but because he's not
I'm a trenches guy.
Because he's not,
you know, trenches guys notice.
He's not bringing sack numbers up.
Know.
He's not getting all these glory plays.
I
and he's
know.
Just doing the dirty work. Some people might not notice it. But, yeah, I could see him having a big step up. I think B.J. Goodson has a chance, too. You know, we thought last year might have been his breakout year, but then again, the injuries really kind of limited him, especially in the middle of the year. But if he can figure out especially a way to cover a little bit better, and we saw a little bit of that towards the end of last year, I think he's a guy that if he figures out a way to be a three-down linebacker next to Alec Ogletree, that's another guy I think could be a breakout performer for the Giants.
I'm going to give you one other guy, and it's going to be on the offensive side of the ball, and it's going to come with an asterisk because it's going to require you to stretch your belief a little bit. I thought Red Ellison was terribly underused last season. Terribly underused. I don't think he nearly saw enough snaps. I don't think he was nearly enough a part of the offense. And so I think Red Ellison is going to be a much more productive player. Now, does that qualify him as a breakout player? I don't know. That's why it's kind of a gray area for me. But I expected to see a ton of him, especially after the preseason he had.
Yeah, and very quiet.
Again, there were times he barely got on the field.
Yeah, a fan tweeted me the other day, and they said they thought Red Ellison was a bust.
That's not fair.
I thought about trying to engage, but there are no stats that can back up my opinion. Because if you look at just the numbers, you could argue Red Ellison was a bust. But look, he was a good blocker. He did what he was asked, and he was very underutilized because the Giants, frankly, didn't use a lot of 12 personnel. They were on 11 personnel for the majority of the year, so Ellison maybe didn't get on the field as much as some people thought he would. So, again, I think calling him a bust last year is too strong, but I do think he should have more of a role this year.
Yeah, I would hope so. I'm looking up the snap counts, and just to give you an idea, this is a guy who, you remember, during the preseason, even Ben McAdoo said this guy might be the best pure football player we have on the team. He loved Red Ellison, and then inexplicably did not give him a lot of snaps. And I'm going to give you the number here, John. PFF has them. I go to Pro Football Reference for my snap counts.
All good.
And I'm going to go here just to find Ellison. And where is he? Oh, my goodness. He only played 49.6% of the offensive snaps.
How many did Ingram play? 71%.
Ingram played 71.7.
Just curious. Well, even Roger Lewis played a higher percentage of snaps than Ellison. Then again, because of injuries on the wide.
Well, yeah. But Red Ellison, to me, was significantly underutilized, and that's all I want to say about that. And
fine.
I think he'll have a bigger role.
The Giants would love to see Darian Thompson have a breakout year at safety, or for someone to have a breakout year at safety next to Landon Collins. But
would
we'll
love
see
to
if
see
someone
that.
Could do it.
Would love to see that, and he certainly qualifies because he had a quiet season last year.
All right, around the league real quickly. Breakout players.
I thought you were just going to take the NFC East.
Yeah, you know what? I'm just going to pick out guys I think around the league that could kind of break out, Paul, and I think could really make names for themselves this year. Guys that I think have really could step up, I'll go to the two draft picks last year. I think maybe Solomon Thomas on the Niners and Myles Garrett. Mm-hmm. On the Browns.
Mm-hmm.
I think those two guys are guys that could have big years. I did not like the wide receiver class last year, but I bet you one of the three of Corey Davis, Mike Williams, or John Ross, and I lean much more towards Corey Davis and Mike Williams, I wouldn't be surprised if one of those two guys had a very good year. And the Titans would love it to be Corey Davis because Mariota really needs a consistent wide receiver to throw the ball to. Patrick Mahomes could have a breakout year for the Chiefs as their starting quarterback.
I agree with Mahomes.
I think that could be a good one there.
Of course, he didn't play very much last year, so that's also one of those asterisk picks.
True, but yeah, that's a fair point. Jonathan Allen on the Redskins, who I think played, one or two games last year before he got hurt?
Yeah.
Jonathan Allen.
Again.
That's another guy I liked from last year
Cameo action.
Oh, and the Eagles' second-round pick, the corner out of Washington, that was out the whole year with the Achilles, who came back at the very end. The name escapes me. Any recollection there, Paul? I think he was a second-round pick. I can bring that up.
You lost
Hold
me.
On 1 second. I'm looking for the name. I know this is great radio, guys. I appreciate it. Sidney Jones, the cornerback out of Washington, was going to be a first-round pick. And remember at his pro day, he popped his Achilles. I think that's another guy that could come back this year and have a big-time bounce-back year. Now, anybody that jumps out at you around the league that you think?
I have one guy who just sticks out like a sore thumb.
Yeah.
Kenyon Drake, running back for the Dolphins. I think he really did some great things at the end of last season. And, you know, Tannehill is proven now he is not the answer. And so they got to run the ball a lot. And I do think the Dolphins have a lot of young talent there. And for me, I think he's going to be up amongst the rushing leaders this year. I think he's a really good player.
he was very talented out of Alabama.
Mm-hmm.
If you remember, he was in the same class that year, and I'm trying to remember the other big-time running back he came out with. I think it was with Fournette. And Fournette might have – he might have actually been a recruit on the same level as Fournette. But Stills was going to – remember, he was going to be – Drake, rather, was going to be the starting running back there. And then he tore up his knee on the opening kickoff.
Correct.
1 year.
Correct.
And then he yielded the position to – I'm sorry, it was Derrick Henry at Alabama. And then Derrick Henry took over.
Henry was at Bama.
And he ended up being the starting quarterback there. The only thing I would worry about with Drake, Paul, is that they drafted Kalen Ballage – and they signed Frank Gore, so I think he's going to be a timeshare running back, unfortunately, especially with Gore there.
I think Gore is insurance. I think he's what Jonathan Stewart is for the Giants. I think he's a character guy, and I think he's insurance.
Okay.
I think Drake is going to wind up being the guy who gets the bulk of that. By the time they get into the third or fourth game of the season, my hunch is he's going to be their lead back.
All right, you know what? I'm going to save my question
anyway.
For later in the show if
sure.
we get long calls or maybe another show because I think this is a good way to start, and we got a full bank of calls. Let's
get
to it, Paul. 201-939-4513. And by the way, I know we didn't get to your tweets yesterday at hashtag Giants Chat. I do have them locked and loaded. I'll get to yesterday's questions, and we'll do questions from today as well. But we'll start off with Christian in New York. He's our first caller on Big Blue Kickoff Live. Hi, Christian.
Hey, guys. I haven't had a chance to talk about the draft yet. I feel like it's a total home run. It seems like at least five of them are going to be contributors, like, sooner than later for this team. And having Webb and LaLetta, I feel like the chances of having to draft a quarterback high in the near future are pretty slim. So, I love the direction that this draft sent the team in. But I have to say that Landon Collins is starting to scare me a little bit because he seems a little too willing to go the extra mile, and it seems like the media is just going to start baiting him at this point. And, it seems like I know Shermer already talked about it, so that definitely helps, but, I just hope that he kind of takes that warning from Shermer.
Define extra mile for me. You said he's not willing to go the extra mile.
No, he said he's going the extra mile.
Oh, he's going.
I think, because remember, Pat Shermer talked about it the other day in terms of him commenting about Eric Flowers' situation.
Doesn't want players talking about other players.
And I think, Christian, I don't want to speak for you. That's what you meant, right?
Yeah. He's going too far with his comments about other players, and it's really just not helping. And,
Christian, here's the thing. I think there's really a fine line. I appreciate what he's trying to do. He's trying to be a leader. And he's trying to talk to these guys individually and get through them individually. And then I guess what his thought process is, well, that hasn't worked. Then maybe if I say something publicly, it'll motivate them to do whatever. I agree. I don't think it's helpful. But I do think if you go back, Paul, to other veteran players that are leaders, veteran players and leaders of teams have called out teammates before in the media to get messages across. It has happened before.
Yeah.
It's not unprecedented. But – I'm with Pat Shermer, head coach Pat Shermer. I think Paul's as well, that obviously you want to keep all that stuff in-house.
Yeah, he wants to set the law down right from the get-go that he doesn't want players to be quoted in the paper talking about their teammates.
No, exactly.
I understand the philosophy.
Yep.
And however, I also don't think Collins is a bad guy
no.
for doing what he did. I think he really intentionally was trying to show leadership skills to try to affect something to happen.
Positive.
Shaking the bushes a little bit.
I agree.
But intentions aside, Pat Shermer wants to install a very clean set of rules.
Yep.
We're not going to talk about teammates, and you have to respect it.
And that's the best way to go about things. You
yep.
want to keep people's – to use the colloquial expression, keep other people's names out of your mouth. Let's go to
– Okay.
Let's go to JW in Florida. JW, you're up next. What's going on, pal?
Good morning, gentlemen. How are you today?
We're great, J-Dub. How are you?
Good. I got just a couple of questions. Number one, do you think that the third wideout is on the club now, or are they going to do something else and try to get somebody else?
The third wideout, J-Dub, is on the roster right now, and they'll let whomever the best receiver is in that room after Beckham and Shepard earn that spot. I don't expect another significant signing, maybe at the end of camp, but I wouldn't think anything before training camp.
Yeah, I think Corey Latimer has a foot up on everybody else.
Yeah.
We know that his receivers coach at Denver certainly gave him a thumbs up.
Tyke Tolbert.
He followed him that is Coach Tolbert, to the Giants, and there must be a reason for that, in addition to him being a really good special teams player.
And he's 6'2", he's a little bit bigger than the other guys, too.
Yes, so he has a leg up, but that doesn't mean that they won't be looking on the radar for another guy at some point in time before the 53 is finalized.
Question two, J-Dub.
And the other one is, could you just tell me a little bit about who the offensive line coach is and what his strengths are and what you think of him as a fit with the club?
Thanks, J-Dub. Appreciate the call. Hal Hunter, look, he's been around the league a very long time. We talked to him probably about a month ago. I think it was the beginning of April.
Yeah.
And he talked about how last year he did not work for an NFL team. He had worked for probably a half dozen NFL teams before that, I would say, give or take. Most recently, I think, with Cleveland and I think Indianapolis, too, recently. He's a guy that last year, what I liked about it, he took the time and he went and visited other teams and other coaches and kind of learned to see what they did at those spots. And hopefully that'll turn into better production and a more consistent unit with the Giants. And I have noticed he does a little bit different in terms of the drills that we saw from Flaherty, that we saw from Solario when they were here. The drills are a little bit different, especially with, you know, focusing on the punch and the hands with, like, the sparring gloves. Yeah, exactly. So a little bit different.
He's a rather diminutive fellow in stature, a little bit older.
He is in Lance now, all right? Let's not make it out that way.
Lance needs maybe a fruit cart to get up to him.
Yeah, exactly.
Quite honestly, he's a soft-spoken, even keel, very methodical teacher kind of guy.
He's got an edge to him, though, too. You don't want to get him angry.
No, but he's not a screamer by nature.
No.
So that's a little bit about him.
Yeah, so the Giants hope that he can put this offense line together and have a real nice unit. Vic in Florida, line four. What's up, Vic? How are you?
Hey, John and Paul. How you guys doing today?
Hello.
Long time no speak, Vic.
Yeah, listen, I got a couple of things. A breakout year for the Giants, believe it or not, is going to be Gorman, okay? Simply because Saquon Barkley is going to make everybody else that much better. Now, number two.
Yeah, but Vic, real quick.
If
Gallman's not on the field when Barkley is, how is Barkley going to make Gallman better?
Because he's going to be motivated by Saquon Barkley because he's going to have a great year and he's going to compete, try to do not match him, but try to do his best as a running back.
Vic,
I think he's going to have a good year.
I'll give you a crumb here, and that is if Gallman, who was a touchdown monster when he was in college, if he turns into the goal line back, because as John has expressed to me before, you know, Barkley's not necessarily known for pushing the pile inside the 2-yard line. Well, if Gallman seems to find a way to sniff out the end zone and slither his way through with high efficiency, there's a possibility Gallman could lead this team in rushing touchdowns this year with relatively few carries because he could wind up being the goal line back. That's a possibility. And if you want to call that as a breakout, well, then that's fair.
Okay, no.
I don't know what's going to happen, but it's not out of the question.
And remember, Jonathan Stewart's there too, which makes it a little bit more complicated.
Not out of the question, though.
Okay, my second thing, I'm sorry I got a cold.
That's okay.
My second thing in the draft, I would have picked as the last pick. I would have gone for another offensive lineman rather than a defensive tackle. Do you agree with that or not?
Well, we were doing the draft show, and then there were two offensive linemen. I think Crosby was still on the board in round five, right?
So Crosby and Jones both went
right
after the Giants in round five.
And those are guys that Paul and I, frankly, had picked out as far back as round three. So those are guys we talked about on that Saturday as a potential pick there. But, look, Dave Gettleman knows how to evaluate and draft people that play up front. So I will obviously yield to his expertise there. But I get where you're coming from, Vic. I think it was more of a need. But here's the thing,
okay.
and I wrote an article on Giants.com about this. Dave Gettleman doesn't give two you-know-whats about need. He's going to pick the best player, and as much as he loves Hogmiles on the offensive line, his draft history shows you he actually likes picking defensive linemen more than he does offensive linemen.
Okay. Well, listen, guys, thank you very much for taking my call. I appreciate you guys. I watch your show every day, and the Giants going to go all the way. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Vic.
Thanks, Vic.
We appreciate you being part of the show, listening, and giving us a call. I want to get to a couple tweets from yesterday, Paul, that I didn't get to, and then we'll get back to your phone calls at 201-939-4513. We had a caller yesterday that compared Barkley's style to Barry Sanders. Remember that call?
I do remember the
call. Well, James Jones at Lil_TNT32, would you say he's a bigger version of LeSean McCoy? And someone else, and I believe Sam Monson from Pro Football Focus had that comparison a couple months ago back around the combine, and I thought it was very, very strong. McCoy is a guy that likes to bounce. He's a guy that makes big plays. He's an excellent receiver out of the backfield. And, boy, he's a heck of a player. So I have no problem with a bigger version of LeSean McCoy as a comparison for Saquon Barkley. I think it's kind of right on the money, to be honest with you.
I'm still preferential to the Marshall Faulk, Thurman Thomas, and Roger Craig comparisons, to be honest. I don't have a problem comparing him to those guys.
You don't want to compare him to a former Eagle.
Well, no, I'm also partial to the old fellas.
I know.
You know, I mean, old school guy. I'm going back a few years.
A lot of our younger fans that are listening probably don't know Roger Craig and Thurman Thomas. I'm trying to give a more modern comparison.
I know, I understand, but I'm always going to favor the old guys. It's just me.
I think in terms of style, it makes a good point. Because McCoy does like to bounce and things like that. So
I think
that makes sense. Here's another question.
By the way, McCoy was a real pain in the butt.
He still is.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny. He's one of those guys that I thought might kind of tail off quicker, because a lot of times if you rely on bounce and speed and quickness, you'll decline a little bit quicker. He's done a heck of a job, man. I mean, he's probably going to, his ninth year?
Yeah.
Now LeSean McCoy, and he is still one, and he's staying healthy, too. It's not like he's missing 7-8 games a year.
He's been a terrific player.
He's probably going to be a Hall of Famer.
Could be by the time he's done.
Probably. All right, this is a question on the defense, Paul. Do you think Betcher's scheme will try to match JPP's production with players like Carter, Martin, etc.? This mentality reminds me of Billy Beane's Moneyball approach, trying to match batting production with less expensive products. Your thoughts?
It's an interesting comparison to pull up the Billy Beane baseball philosophy.
And that is from Dom DeFalco, by the way. Sorry.
I don't think it has anything to do with the Beane philosophy, because the Beane philosophy also equates and puts the economy into the package. And I don't think Betcher gives two hoots about economy. Betcher is all about confusion. He's about not showing any trends. He's about making sure that you dictate to the other guy across the line of scrimmage what he's going to be able to do based on the stuff you're going to throw at him.
Right.
And you're going to make him overthink. To me, it's more that than it is looking at the economy value and looking at the collective stats of a particular group of players and saying they're going to have to replace what JPP did. I just think it's a philosophical thing more than it is a particular fit.
One other Saquon comp from Ben Gruen. He brings up Bo Jackson, and this is it's important here. He says not in run style,
right,
but in terms of size plus freakish speed at that size. And I think in terms of an elite athlete, sure, compared to Bo, but not the way the two guys run, as he points out.
I don't remember exactly what Bo Jackson ran, so let me see if I can find
it. I guarantee you he was one of the best athletes of his era, whatever his combine numbers and other things
might
have
been. What did he run? Let's see. Bo Jackson ran there's a story here. Oh, man. He ran a
what do you want to
Jackson ran a 4.12. Online sources said Jackson ran a 4.12 at the 1986 Combine.
Then known as the National Invitational Camp, not even called the Combine yet.
4.12. And the problem is it was unconfirmed.
And nothing's official.
And they're
right.
Saying that it's not official, but many reporters, including Dave Raffo, who I knew from UPI for many, many, many years, he covered boxing and a lot of other sports.
4.12 is pretty good. Remember the old story about Dion? He ran the 40 wearing – remember those old, super colorful Fresh Prince of Bel-Air jackets?
Yes, yes.
He wore one of those, and they said, Dion, why'd you wear the jacket when you ran your 40? He said, it's like a parachute so I can stop at the end of the run. Two other tweets from yesterday I want to get to real quick. We talked about Eric Flowers and how his pressures allowed, according to Pro Football Focus, has gone down consistently over the past couple of years.
Yeah.
And Jorge Cano points out, and I think it's a good point from him, that Eli Manning's 2.4-second release time probably last year, getting the ball out quicker, probably had something to do with the reduced number of pressures allowed, and I think that's probably a fair point.
Yeah, but here's the thing about that. Eli's release time is an across-the-board philosophical change that they made because the entire line was not as good as they wanted it to be.
Correct.
It wasn't specifically designed to Flowers.
Absolutely. But I think it's fair to say, though, that Eli probably got rid of the ball quicker last year than he did the two prior seasons.
Yeah, I'm sure that's the case.
Yeah.
I didn't clock any of that. I would be interested to know, and I have, again, I have the sack numbers. I don't have the pressure numbers that they keep. I would think there's a chance that Flowers didn't even have a team high in pressures. I wouldn't be shocked if there was someone else on the team who allowed more.
For example,
Bobby Hart.
And I will check that when we go to our next call. Let's go to Coach Marvin in Delaware on line two. Mr. Shaw, Coach Marvin, what's up?
How you doing, guys?
What's up, Coach?
Hi.
Hey, I just called to give my breakout season.
Go ahead.
I'm more of a give up my players for the breakout season, and I'm more of an underdog guy.
Yep.
So my two guys, I got one on the defense and one on the offense.
Sure.
Might think I'm crazy, but I believe in both of these guys that they could turn it around. The first one is Eli Apple. I think Eli does have man skills. All you have to do is turn that around into ball skills.
Yeah, Marvin, I don't disagree with you. I almost think that's more of a comeback season than it would be a breakout season.
I agree.
Because we saw him play really well at the end of his rookie year. You know what I mean?
I thought he should have been an all-rookie pick in the league, quite
yeah.
frankly. He played extremely well and lived up to his potential as a number one pick. So I'm with John on that. I'd say if you wanted to put him in the comeback category, I'd be more inclined to do so.
I can kind of agree with you. I'm not going to say you're wrong, but I still say it because it was his rookie year. He had a good year. No, I'm
That's
talking
fair.
Breakout year.
That's
you,
fair.
You're going to see something that was better. I believe it'll be better than his rookie year. So that's why I kind of categorize him as a breakout year. But I can understand what you're coming from saying as a comeback. But I would rather see him do a lot better. He didn't play the ball too well, but he does play man very well. So I'd like
mm-hmm.
to see that.
Okay, what else you got?
Improvement. And the other ones might knock some people off, socks off a little bit, but I think this is the time. I think Eric Flowers may come in with a different attitude. He showed up this week, and I think you already talked about it yesterday about him improving. I think breakout season for Eric. This is money time. Sometimes when money time comes, these guys all of a sudden start playing. So
he wouldn't be the first guy who did very well in the final year of a contract.
And, Coach, just remember, we can talk about it. And we talked about it going into last season. We thought it could be a huge, huge step for him. I think it ended up being a much, much smaller step than a lot of people would have hoped.
Yes.
So we'll have to come out, and he'll have a chance to do it, and he'll have a chance to win the job. We'll see what he does.
Put it this way, Coach, he will have – a big O opportunity to be the guy that he needs to be. There's no question about that.
Just like the last 3 years.
No doubt.
Right, right. I agree with that. I think he got, he got an agent in his corner. He can be a little controversial back in his time, but I think he'll be an agent that can light a fire under him a little bit. Different coaching staff as far as the offensive line. And, again, this is really a prove-it year for his career.
Yep.
He's got to come out, and I think he's going to come out, and he's going to prove. I'm not saying it's all-star, but you're going to see a definitely improvement.
We'll see.
That'd
Thank
be
you,
good,
Coach.
Marvin.
Right,
appreciate
guys.
It.
Yeah.
Appreciate the call, buddy.
John, the only thing I would say that definitely has changed with Eric Flowers is now Drew Rosenhaus is representing him. He now has an official NFL agent doing so instead of being handled by a family member. And Drew Rosenhaus, for whatever you think about him, he's a very smart businessman.
He's a professional.
And he is a professional, and he knows what he's doing. And if he is able to get through to Eric Flowers and understand that he can only enhance his value by coming in and playing well, that potentially could be a voice that does turn around Flowers' career.
I agree. By the way, Eric Flowers played more snaps than any other Giants offensive lineman last year, for one. He played 1,000 snaps. He allowed 27 pressures. Bobby Hart, in just 523 snaps, so only half,
right,
allowed 25. I'm sorry. So even though it was two less, the rate was obviously much higher.
Right.
But believe it or not, Pugh, in just 436 snaps, actually allowed 20. Remember, he was at a right tackle a bit in between his injuries towards
Correct.
The end of the year, and he wasn't 100%. So
Correct.
Just another number out there. And here's one of the real interesting one for you. Just looking at the Pro Football Focus grading here. keep in mind their grades are cumulative. So the more your positive game in, game out, the more your grades are going to go up. They stack. You know what I mean? So if you're a plus one for five straight games, you have a plus five grade for the year. That's kind of how it works. Just so you just so you understand when I ask you the question.
Okay.
Who do you think the highest graded Giants player was on offense last year?
Probably Sterling Shepard.
He was the third highest.
Okay.
There are two guys better than him. Well, Number one, and it was a blowout. It wasn't close.
Well, they had to like Brett Jones.
Brett Jones, they were not. They're not as big on Brett Jones, but it's one of your guys though. Red Ellison.
Okay.
Because of his run blocking, that was the number one grade on the Giants' offense because of the extent, and he had the best run block rate on the whole team, better than any offensive lineman.
A gentleman who was not nearly utilized as often as he should have.
Just throwing it out there. 201-939-4513.
I got a bad feeling about this.
Hallelujah.
Losing his mind.
Mr. Illness.
He wasn't right in the hat.
Enough jokes.
I am happy.
You're a madman.
And here we go.
Charlie in Portland, Maine is up next. Hi, Charlie.
Hey, Paul. Hey, John.
Hey, how's it going, Charlie?
It's good. Hey, I got a breakout player and a breakdown player.
A breakdown player, okay.
Of course you have the breakdown player. Let's start positive, okay?
All right. I think the breakout player is actually going to be Mr. Dion, Mr. Diminutive cornerback. I think he's going to actually stick on the 53, and I think he's going to play really well in the slot. And whenever we need him, I think the guy's got the attitude, and I just think he needs a chance to show it, and hopefully they'll give him the opportunity. Since our cornerback situation is a little weak, I just think he's gonna have a breakout year.
Well, I just noticed. You notice that Charlie and Dave Gettleman say cornerback almost the same way?
Yeah, they do. I will say this, Charlie. Dante Dion could really help himself an awful lot. Because, you know, Grant Haley from Penn State, one of the undrafted rookie free agents who came in here, is also 5'9". And to me, only one 5'9 corner is going to make this team. You're not going to have two 5'9 guys. It just doesn't make enough sense with the size in this league.
Yep.
So first thing that Dante Dion's got to do is win that spot. Because Haley's going to try to challenge him. Now, special teams is going to be a big deal there. Because the guy who's really kicking butt in punt and kickoff coverage, you know, maybe the guy who gets a leg up on that spot.
Yeah.
Then you can start talking about what he might do in the sub package. But let's see what happens in that special teams battle between those two guys.
And they also gave Gray, I think his name's Gray, the guy you're just talking about, they gave him a $100 signing bonus. So they think something
Haley.
Of the guy
Haley
from
is
Penn
his name
State.
From
yeah.
Penn State. Yeah.
Yeah, the guy from Penn State. My breakdown player, it's got to be Mr. Eric Flowers. Now, I don't know if Mr. Hunter has any hair. Because if he does, he ain't going to have any when
he doesn't
Eric
have
Flowers
much.
Comes in.
He's like me.
You know? Because he's got to pull it all out. Because there's no way. Look, remember what Akosi said? He said, the offensive line is like five fingers in for like a glove.
Yep.
And if you have one missing, the whole glove is useless. We can't go into this season with four great players or good players on the offensive line and then have someone terrible as our right tackle. So they've got to address that. They have to find somebody who is adequate, solid right tackle or good. Or the whole money that we gave Solder, the rookie we brought in, Hernandez, ain't going to make a bit of difference.
All right, Charlie.
We're going to have one guy missing.
I'm going to ask you to be patient here for just a second because we all understand that the Giants' right tackle spot is going to need to be better this season. No one is going to dispute that. Whether or not it's Flowers, Wheeler, or somebody else who we haven't even talked about, that's not relevant here. What is relevant is that the spot gets better. Now, the right side, it didn't work much last year, and partially because Red Ellison did not play enough snaps. So Bobby Hart, as he was drowning over there, he wasn't getting much help. We know what kind of blocker Red Ellison is. He came here with a really good reputation. Red Ellison's going to be on top of the right shoulder of the right tackle this year a heck of a lot more than he was last season, which means he will be helping with combo blocks, with blocks off the edge, and that right tackle doesn't necessarily have to be this high on the charts. He's just got to be okay because Red Ellison will help him. Keep that in mind, okay? Please.
No, I understand that, but I just hate having to have a babysitter for a guy that is just adequate. You know, I think we need to get somebody by June when the mandatories happen, because as you all know, this offensive line needs syncopation. They need to be in sync, and you can't bring somebody in on the September 1st cuts to do that.
Right.
So I hope they bring in a veteran for mandatory just to compete. If he doesn't win it out, fine. But we got to bring somebody out to compete, because right now we just have Flowers and Wheeler, and you said Gates is going to be at guard. So the only other guy is the guy from Missouri who's a project. So they have to bring in a vet. And,
well, we'll
and Gets has got to understand that. He's smart enough to know that.
You know what? I guarantee you that Gettleman's radar –
Of course.
Is on the lookout for anybody who could help the competition at that spot.
Paul, what are the three toughest positions to find in the NFL? Quarterback, defensive end, offensive tackle. Three toughest ones to find in today's NFL. You can't find pass rushers on the street. You can't find offensive tackles on the street.
Especially in a bargain.
And you can't find quarterbacks on the street. You can't.
But
it's really, really hard.
Please, Charlie, understand. Ellison will be viewed at, I believe, as more of an extension of that offensive line this year, just like Howard Cross was. Talk to Howard about this. You remember when Howard was in his prime?
Howard blocked Reggie White on his own, if you ask him.
No, Howard Cross was one of the best pure blocking tight ends the NFL has seen in the last 30 years.
If he was coming out, and I love Howard, all jokes aside, if he was coming out in the draft today, he probably wouldn't even be a tight end. He'd be an offensive tackle.
Yeah,
to
right.
Be honest. I'm not even joking.
No, I get
like,
it.
You watch Howard walk through the cafeteria, he looks a lot more like the offensive tackles here than
he does
the tight ends.
He does. But especially the last few years when Howard was here, you know, the deal was Parcells basically made him an extension of the offensive line. And so, in effect, you had 5.5, if you will, offensive linemen on every play.
Howard's not a half anything, by the way.
This is true. I don't want to slight him. But the point remains – count Ellison as half of an offensive lineman on the shoulder of the right tackle, which means, by the way, Charlie, when you said, you know, adequate's not good enough, actually, adequate is good enough from the right tackle spot if that's the weakest link on your line. How many teams in the NFL would like to say that the weakest link on their line is just adequate? That would actually be very good.
Well, it depends how you look at adequate. If you consider adequate average, then yeah, that's great. But I think if the Giants could sign up for an average performance out of their league average right tackle this year, I think they'd sign on the dotted line.
Absolutely.
Today.
Absolutely.
No. Let's go to Rick in Tampa. He's up next. Rick, line two. How are you, buddy?
Guys, how are you guys?
We're good.
Hi.
Show as usual. You know, first time calling in since the draft and everything. And, I mean, breakout player, you know, just to chime in on that, I believe what you guys said, Evan Engram, I think that'll be the case as well. I think he's due for a big year with this offense. But two quick points. One regarding the draft, I mean, love everything about the draft. And regarding Eli, I love Eli. Eli doesn't have to be superstar Eli of the past. He just has to be good with the offensive weapons he's got. I'm excited for the way he's going to play, and I think he just has to be out there, play smart, and they're going to score a lot of points.
Yeah, Rick, I would say the word for Eli this year is efficient.
Mm-hmm.
He needs to not make mistakes and be accurate, throw the ball where it has to go, and let guys make plays for him. That's it.
Right, exactly. Yeah, exactly. Now, regarding I'm not too concerned about – I think they made good signings, and I think the offensive line – is going to be good this year. It's going to be good enough. It's going to be good. I'm excited about that. But I think you just brought it up. I think the problem that we didn't address and is going to be a problem is defensive end, a pass rusher, somebody for sacks. We don't really have that.
It is.
And I think if we can't get to the quarterback consistently, we haven't in the past. I mean, Vernon, you know, he's great and stuff, but he's not a true defensive end. And where do you see that's going to come from for the team on the defensive side? Because I think that's the part that we really don't have a number one defensive end.
Rick, look, I think Vernon is a real good quality defensive end pass rusher. Now, is he going to give you the 18 sacks or 17 sacks that you know, Von Miller will get you, or Khalil Mack. No, he's not going to go that high. But he'll give you borderline double digits. He'll give you around 10 if you look at his career average. You know, somewhere between 8 and 10 based on what he's done over the course of his career. But the question is, who's the other guy? When your number one guy isn't a Von Miller or Khalil Mack, it needs to be more of a team effort. You know, another guy that's going to give you, you know, let's say 7-9 or 6-8 on the other side, or 8-12. And I think right now it's going to be a bit of a pass rush by committee, for lack of a better term. I think Kareem Martin will get some shots there. I think Avery Moss will get some shots there. I think rookie Lorenzo Carter will get some shots there, and they'll roll different guys in.
Don't you think their defensive pick, don't you think that their defensive pick in the draft after they took Trent and the lineman should have been a defensive end pass rusher, not the way they went with, I think it was a quarterback or linebacker?
Carter is. I think, Rick, you have to expand your thinking a little bit and don't look at, in Betcher's defense, you need a defensive end to rush the passer. Carter is a pass rusher. He's an edge player. And I think that's kind of the hybrid term that's been thrown around in the draft the last few years, where you're not really looking at, oh, he's a defensive end. He's a 3-4 outside linebacker. He's an edge rusher. You're in nickel and sub package 70% of the time now, and he will be a guy either rushing from a stand-up position or have his hand in the dirt as a pass rusher in sub package. So to me, that's your pass rusher in the draft, even though he might not be your traditional quote unquote defensive end. You know what I mean?
Okay. All right. That was just the one concern, but I'm looking forward to this season. And I don't want to skip the summer. I don't want to skip the baseball and everything that we're going on now, but I can't wait. I can't wait till they start training and they're ready to go. Cause I'm excited for what this team's going to do this season. So I'm looking forward to it. Keep up the work. Great show as usual.
Thank you, buddy. Hey, and if you want to call up and talk Yankee baseball, we can do that
too. I agree in basic principle to what John said about the sacks, but let me reverse the questioning for a moment. He was asking about Eli. One of the reasons why all of these quarterback rankings and efficiency stats are saying that Eli really had a subpar down year last year is because when you look at his touchdown to interception ratio and you look at his average yards per attempt and reception, those stats were way, way down.
Of course.
But his completion percentage was not. He was getting rid of the ball quick enough and one of the quickest releases in the game because he needed to be.
Yeah.
And so here's the deal. Look at the receivers he had to throw to all year. Is it any wonder that his touchdown pass numbers were down? Is it any wonder that his yards per attempt and yards per catch were down? There wasn't anybody on this team outside of Evan Ingram and sometimes Sterling Shepard who would get any yardage after a catch.
Hey, what do we say? What do we say? I asked you this straight out 2 weeks ago.
So those guys crippled his numbers.
Sure they did. I asked you 2 weeks ago, Paul, and I this is what I said to you. Eli's got everything he could ever want this year.
He does.
See how he does.
You'll be fine.
The proof is in the pudding. Couple other tweets real quick from It's Shermering in here. He wonders about the transition for Flowers from left to right tackle, and he quotes Brian Baldinger, try brushing your teeth with your left hand if you're right-handed and see how it goes. So, and I don't think that should be underplayed. He hasn't played right tackle since his freshman year at Miami. That now would be 5 years ago, and it's going to be an adjustment. So, look, I think Wheeler, and he expects Wheeler to win that job. I think Wheeler's got a shot at it. I think, obviously, Flowers is the more gifted athlete. That's why he was a first-round pick, obviously. And we'll see if he can make that adjustment and improve his technique on that side enough where he can beat out Wheeler for the job and he'll have a chance to compete. That's kind of what we've been talking about.
Well, you know, I do think that at this point in time, if Eric Flowers has been reading the papers, and undoubtedly he has, he understands that that's where he's going to be.
I remember, though.
So whatever workouts he's been doing on his own down in Florida, I would like to believe that he has been training as a right tackle. I don't know that.
You would hope,
You would hope so. Yeah. Which, you know, he's not coming in here, I don't think, cold turkey. I'd like to believe that he has been training at right tackle. And by the way, in 2012, you mentioned when he played right tackle at Miami, played all 12 of his games at right tackle at the University of Miami in 2012, made 4 starts.
As a true freshman, right.
Okay. So it's not like he hasn't done it before.
Like I said, it was 5 years ago.
You know,
yeah.
He I think he knows left and right. I think he gets it.
Let's go back to the phones at 201-939-4513. Line 3, Marquez out in California. Good morning, Marquez. How are you?
Good morning. How you doing, guys?
Doing good, man. What's up?
Well, as I was waiting on the phone, like a couple of my points got talked about. So
that's all right. Marquez, whatever you want to talk about, we're here for you.
All right. So right now I'm just very excited to see the defensive scheme from James Betcher just because it's like a new revamped defense. We've been in 4-3 for the last, 10-plus years, you know what I mean? So now I get to see a new defensive scheme at 3-4 that's going to put guys like Olivier Vernon, like a couple guys that was pass rushers, defensive ends, has now been changed to linebacker, which is exciting for me, you know?
Yep.
I've been hearing Olivier Vernon, you know, they were trying to say he's going to have, James Betcher was saying he might have a breakout year like Chandler Jones, you know, in Arizona. So hearing things like that gets me excited to see, you know, that the defense is going to look pretty much, you know, a little different this year.
Yeah, look, I think the new scheme's exciting. I think in the modern-day NFL, it's a lot easier in the draft to find 3-4 players than it is 4-3 players, simply because 3-4, in my opinion, is the dominant scheme in college right now. I think it also allows you to be a lot more flexible in how you move people around. More versatile players. I like it.
Another thing I was going to say, the nickel corner position right now, I mean, I know it's kind of early to say, but who do you guys think, you know, a couple guys that can go ahead and fill that void for us? Because DRC, I feel, would have been a big impact in this new scheme.
Yeah. Well, William Gay is number one, the veteran from Pittsburgh.
Right. And you know, I still think that Dante Dion has a shot to win that job, but Haley was brought in as well as a bunch of four or five, I don't know if you want to call them journeymen or not, but
young veterans,
experienced players,
yeah,
who have been brought in off of other teams to try to win a spot. I mean, it's kind of up in the air right now. I think Gay has the inside track, though, to be the slot corner. I don't think there's any doubt about that. Beyond that,
thank you, Marquez. Appreciate the call.
Depth at corner's thin, John.
Yeah, and that's why that was one of our targets in the draft. But it's funny, going through the draft, we picked out a couple offensive tackles we thought might be a fit. And again, we were looking more in need than we were at the board, per se. But corner was another position, but we never really got to a spot where we thought the best player left was a cornerback.
No.
The best argument could have been made actually at the top of the second round. But both of us liked Hernandez so much, it was hard to go away from him.
I wasn't passing on Hog Molly.
But Mike Hughes was there, and
Jackson
was there. So
I was not passing on Hog Molly.
But do you agree that was probably the best shot?
If you were thinking about value matching need, that would have been the best spot in retrospect. They would have had to really do it in round two.
But again,
they really wanted to. But the offensive line was just, A, too much of a priority, and B, Hernandez had a first-round grade on him.
Exactly. Pete in Staten Island on line 4. What's up, Pete?
Hold on, guys.
What's up, Pete?
Hi.
Hold on 1 second. I want to take you off speaker.
I appreciate that.
That's a good idea.
Okay.
I like that. It means you've been paying attention.
Hey, very good. What's up, Pete?
I'm working at the same time. I can't do two things at the same time. Anyway, you know, Foley, I went to the tape yesterday. I told you I was going to look at Nick Gates, all right?
Yes.
I did go to a couple of games. The first game I went to, I didn't like it all. The Ohio State game.
The Ohio State game is a bad game. You do not want to look at that. He had a lot of problems in that game.
Yeah, well, listen, you got to look at everything, you know?
I know.
You know, so you can't just say, oh, look at him in Penn State, you know?
Well, here's what I would say, though. When you're looking
at
guys,
I looked at Penn State.
When you're looking at guys, one of the reasons why you want to look at some of their better games is because at least you see that he's got the capability to do some of those things. If you just look, and you're right, you want to look at a full scope of what the guy has done.
Yeah, you want to see what he does well and what
he
does poorly.
You do.
Right.
But the point is, if you just wind up looking at games where he didn't do so well, then you really haven't seen any sense of what his potential is.
Yeah, you want both. You want both.
You do. You do want both.
Yeah,
but yes,
without a doubt. And, of course, you know, when you're going up against Ohio State, of course, you're going against, you know, top-of-the-line guys.
Yeah.
Which is what you really want to see. And, you know, but I had an open mind, and I said, let me take a look.
Yeah.
I see 6'5", 307. His arm length, a little short. He's like a 32 arm length. And I, you know, for a tackle, you really should be somewhere between 32 to 35.
He's a guard, man.
32 being the dead.
Yeah, he's going to be a guard in this league. That's what he is. He's going to be a guard in the NFL.
Yeah, and I think right guard. I think go ahead.
No, I don't want to box him into right or left guard, but I will say this. If there's any chance at all of him gaining some bulk and size and power, maybe he could get away at right tackle, because if he's able to lock up on guys quickly and use his power, he might be able to counter some of their speed, which could then camouflage some of his lack of footwork. So I would say I'm not sure which guard he's going to play, but I think for sure if he's to take any snaps at right tackle in the league, he's going to have to get stronger, and it would be on the right side. That's my analysis of him.
Yeah, the only thing I didn't like, Paul, coming out of his stance, he came out a little high. That was the only thing that I saw, and I picked that up kind of in the Penn State game.
Right.
But maybe it was only because he was going against a player that looked more like an outside linebacker than a defensive end. All right? The guy he was up against, I think he had about it. I want to say at least four or five inches on the guy.
I equate it to the style of blocker he is. There are different styles of offensive linemen, okay? And what my veteran personnel guy said to me is he gave me the perfect name for it, and I didn't know what the name was for it. I called him a dancer, because what he'll do is he'll shadow a guy, get in front of him, and he'll give ground. He'll yield ground, but he won't let the guy through to make the play. So I said to my guy, I was describing this to him. He goes, "Oh, that's a wall-off blocker." I said, I don't remember hearing that before. He goes, "That's what he does. He walls guys off. He gets in the way, impedes them. He's not driving them. He's not anchoring and standing them up. He's just getting in the way enough that the defender can't make the play." That's called a wall-off blocker.
Which is what you see from tight ends a lot in the blocking game.
Yes, you do, John. That's a very good point. That's what Gates showed to me. He's a wall-off blocker, and wall-off blockers will commonly get caught too high because if they're going to be lower, they're probably going to be drive blockers.
Which, by the way, you know, a wall-off guy is not ideal from a guard, by the way.
Again, you know, he's going to need to gain power so that he can be a little bit more of an anchor blocker or more of a drive blocker. He does not have that strength and power right now to do that. Which is why he's more of a wall-off guy. I think he's definite practice squad material in my mind. I'm not speaking for this team, but I do think he's got potential to make an NFL 53. Strong potential to make an NFL 53, at least as a backup.
Okay, I got that. Now, I just wanted to say one thing about what you guys were talking about yesterday when you were talking about Eric Flowers. And, as far as his, being a little bit more proficient last year, in his pass blocking. And John, you had made a point, and I think Paul, you did too, was the scheme of play, the way Eli had no time. He had to get rid of the ball. I mean, it was 1-2-3 gone. You know, so I don't know how Pro Football Focus goes up, or makes their numbers, but if you go off the fact that Eli had to get rid of the ball in 2 or 3 seconds, naturally he's not going to have that many pressures.
Right.
And of course, his grade, or Flowers' grade, might be a little bit better. You follow what I'm saying?
I think this is how they do it. I think what they'll do on a play, like if they see Flowers get beat, but Pete, thanks for the call. We appreciate it. If they see Flowers get beat, but Eli gets the ball out, I still think that's a negatively graded player for Flowers. It might not count as a pressure or a hurry on his stat list because it wasn't technically a pressure or hurry, but I believe the way they do it. So if you see Flowers make a bad block, but the ball's out already, it doesn't affect the play, he'll still get graded negatively on that play because he didn't block well on the play. That's how I think it's done.
Yeah, I don't know how they define all of their parameters, but I would say this, based on the numbers you told us, the percentage of pressures allowed per snap, it sounded like, I didn't do the math as you were saying it, that Hart and Pugh were actually worse than Flowers was.
Correct. No, it was. Based on ratio, absolutely.
Right? Mm-hmm. Based on percentage of pressures allowed per snap, they were worse, and Hart was almost twice as bad.
Pugh was 20 and 436. Hart was 25 and 523 snaps.
I mean,
and
so
Flowers was 27 and 1000.
I mean, yeah. Let you know, and that, and why do I go to that? Because those numbers are now equated across the board. You're not talking about interpretation. You're simply saying they've applied the same rule to every player, and their numbers are significantly worse than Flowers.
Now, again, that's hurry. If you count quarterback hits, Pugh only allowed one quarterback hit. Mm-hmm. Flowers allowed eight. So then that brings the ratio a little bit more equal.
Well, now you're going to start interpreting grades. But
well, again, allowing, you know, that's a plus seven in Flowers comp there as opposed to a plus seven. You know what I mean?
I had I'll give you a good example. For sacks, Flowers, I had given up 5 sacks of the 34, which for me was the team high, okay? Mm-hmm. But then again, you look at the amount of snaps he played, all right? I had John Jerry giving up 3.5. I had Hart giving up 3.5. I had Pugh giving up 3. I had team sacks, which is very interesting. Team sacks means the quarterback held the ball. I had Eli giving up 5 sacks on his own by holding the ball too long.
Covered sacks.
Covered sacks. And I had Geno Smith giving up a couple of covered sacks in the Oakland game. So team sacks was 7, which was actually the highest responsibility for sacks. I don't know, does PFF do team sacks?
They do not.
No, really?
Well, I think it's a very subjective thing.
It's always subjective. It's always subjective. Let that be a lesson to you folks, because there is such a thing as team sacks. Coaches do look for that. That's interesting how PFF doesn't do that. Wow. That is interesting to me. I can't believe they wouldn't do that.
Well, I think if a player allows a sack, that player gets credit for allowing. If their man beats him and gives up the sack, they give the
here's
sack
the thing.
To that player.
All right, here's the thing.
I don't know what their grading system is. I can't answer your question.
Yeah, but there should be a category for that, and here's the reason
why. They might have a category. I'm looking at a list of individual players.
I don't know. Okay, I'll tell you. Let's just tell the fans what a team sack is. Let's say Eli Manning drops back into the pocket. Mm-hmm. He's looking for his first, second, third option. He has 3.5 seconds, okay? Now he decides he's going to roll left because he sees Shepard coming across the field.
Yeah, no
he
one
rolls
should get
left.
Credited for that.
He gets sacked.
Of course.
Well, the defensive end who gets the sack was lined up opposite Flowers.
Yeah, my guess,
Flowers is not getting that sack. That's an Eli sack.
My guess is that they wouldn't give that sack to anybody.
I don't know.
And I don't know. I would have to count how many total sacks the Giants allowed last year compared to their individual numbers.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to do that.
Well, my chart does.
Right.
And I had 7 team sacks, 5 on Eli, 2 on Geno Smith. The rest of them were on blocking sacks.
All right, we got 3 minutes, Paul. Let's get to a couple more tweets here real quick. Brian Sellers, if the offense has a good year and lives up to its potential, what style of offense will we be able to compare it to historically?
We don't know enough yet.
I agree with that.
You know, we just don't. We don't even know if there's going to be a fullback on this team.
Another one. A low-key sleeper for me is Romeo Okwara at outside linebacker. Your thoughts? Is he in the linebacker room? I thought he was
doing 3-4 D-end, right?
Yeah,
he's a D-end. I'll tell you what. Romeo was quiet last year after showing flashes as a rookie. He was quiet, and they kept waiting for him to bust out and help out and get more snaps, but he did not earn the amount of snaps that I know that the coaching staff wanted him to get. And so he could certainly use a breakout year. How about that?
No argument for me.
Yeah. All right. We running out of time?
Yeah, I think we can wrap up.
Okay.
We got a minute to go, but I think we're out of things to talk about, so I think we're good.
All right.
All right. I'm off next couple of days. I'm heading down to the nation's capital, see the Yankees play the Nationals. That'll be fun.
Go Bombers!
Try to avoid the rain, and I'll be back on Friday. Paul Lance and Fields will carry you through the next couple of days talking Giants football. And then, of course, OTAs begin next Monday. We'll have coverage for that on Giants.com. Media availability on Monday as well. So make sure you stay tuned for that, and stay tuned to coverage of the New York Football Giants the rest of the week. Only on Giants.com. For Paul Dottino, I'm John Schmelk. We'll see you tomorrow. Everybody, enjoy your day and avoid the rain.